Welcome to this Forthright Radio for August 16th, 2017. I'm Joy LeClaire. Brian Stevenson is the Executive Director of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama, and a professor of law at New York University School of Law. He has won relief for dozens of condemned prisoners, argued five times before the U.S. Supreme Court, and won national acclaim for his work challenging bias against the poor and people of color. He has received numerous awards, including the MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant. We welcome you to Forthright Radio, Brian Stevenson.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Well, I first heard of the Equal Justice Initiative when Drew Colfax, son of Mickey and David Colfax, who grew up here in Anderson Valley, worked there after getting his law degree. I was, frankly, surprised that he would move to Montgomery, Alabama, but I was not surprised that he would work for challenging social justice. And the work of the Equal Justice Initiative is some of the most difficult and challenging there is. Brian Stevenson, please tell our listeners about that work and how you came to create the Equal Justice Initiative.
Well, we saw a growing problem in our country with regards to our criminal justice system. We had 300,000 people in jails and prisons in 1972. Today we have 2.3 million people in jails and prisons. America has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. And we didn't have infrastructure in many states and in many communities to help the growing numbers of people being accused of crimes get a fair trial, get reliable review. And that created this crisis of hundreds, thousands of people being wrongly convicted, many of them being sentenced to death or to life imprisonment without parole. So we started this project to help provide legal services to some of the most vulnerable and at-risk people in our jails and prisons. We began representing people on death row, people sentenced to life imprisonment without parole, who we believed had been wrongly convicted or unfairly sentenced. We started in 1989. We were fortunate to attract a lot of talented people like Drew Colfax and others who came and joined our effort. The work has expanded, and we now provide legal services to hundreds of people all over the country. We challenge excessive sentencing. We challenge mass incarceration. We challenge wrongful convictions. We have projects to provide services to people coming out of jails and prisons. We work for children. There are 3,000 kids in this country who have been condemned to die in prison. There are states that have no minimum age for trying a child as an adult. We're working with the mentally ill. One of the big problems of our criminal justice system is that it's become a repository for the mentally ill who are poor and vulnerable and don't have access to care and services. And there are hundreds of thousands of people who are put in jails and prisons because of disabilities. And we also are working to help the poor and people of color who are often not treated fairly or equally in our system.
I neglected to mention in the introduction of your really excellent book, Just Mercy, A Story of Justice and Redemption. It kind of explains about your work going through different cases, and I could offer any number of them, but the one I find most compelling and in some ways the most shocking, although the stories of the children are very shocking, is the case of Walter McMillian. That was almost one of your very first cases, right?
Yes, that's right. And it is a shocking case in some respects because most of your listeners have probably heard of and or even read Harper Lee's great novel, To Kill a Mockingbird, which is set in a community in Alabama in the 1930s. Well, the community where Harper Lee grew up is Monroe County, Alabama. And when her novel became published in the 1960s, the community adopted it. They have all of these sites that are designed to draw people to the community to celebrate her contributions to literature. Well, that very same community produced the Walter McMillian case. And in the 1980s, a white woman was murdered. They couldn't solve the crime, and the police ultimately decided to arrest and prosecute Walter McMillian for this crime I don't believe they did that because they had evidence of that, but he was having an affair with a young white woman, which brought him to the attention of many of these investigators. It turned out that at the time of the crime, he was with his family and church members raising money for the church at a fish fry, so there were dozens of people who could verify that he was not guilty, but they were ignored. They put Mr. McMillan on death row before the trial to demonize him. He went to trial. He was convicted based on this incredible testimony from a person who claimed to have seen him involved in this murder. The jury actually gave him a verdict of life, a sentence of life, but in Alabama, our judges, our elected judges, are allowed to override jury verdicts of life. And so the judge, whose name was Robert E. Lee Key, overrode the jury's verdict, imposed the death penalty, and sent Mr. McMillan to death row to be executed. I got involved in his case after he had arrived on death row and spent several years challenging this wrongful conviction, uncovering the evidence that was really clear that proved his innocence and ultimately won his release, but not until he spent 6 years on death row and experienced a good bit of trauma and suffering. And the book is organized around his story, but obviously accompanied by other stories of cases that that I've worked on that expose the problems that we have with over-incarceration and excessive punishment in America.
Brian Stevenson, we're speaking in the context of a very tumultuous time in our history. Your grandmother's parents were actually born into slavery. Do I have that right?
That's right, yes. Yes. That history is very personal to me. My grandmother is the daughter of people who were enslaved. They were born into slavery in Virginia in the 1840s and 50s. And I don't think we've done a very good job in this country of confronting the history of racial inequality, and I think it continues to haunt us. We have incidents like what we've seen in Charlottesville and communities across this country, because I don't think we've actually talked about how to recover from this history. I actually think that America is a post-genocide society. I think what happened to Native people when white settlers came to this continent was horrific, was violent, was destructive. I think it was a genocide. We killed millions of Native people, and we didn't own up to that because we said these Native people are different, that they're savages, and we use this narrative of racial difference to justify that abuse, that exploitation. And then we had 2 centuries of slavery. And I think the great evil of American slavery was not the involuntary servitude and forced labor. I think the great evil was the way we created this ideology of white supremacy. We said that black people are different than white people. They're not fully human. They can't do this. They can't do that. And that embrace of that narrative created a real legacy. And we didn't address that when we ended slavery in the 13th Amendment. If you read the 13th Amendment, it talks about involuntary servitude, but not this narrative of racial difference. And for me, I think slavery didn't end. It evolved. We had decades of terrorism and lynching, and then we had decades of segregation, codified racial hierarchy. I couldn't go to the public school when I was a little boy. I started my education in a colored school because black children weren't allowed to attend the public school. And even when we deconstructed those laws, abolished those laws, the thinking behind this narrative of racial difference persists. And I think we still have presumptions of dangerousness and a guilt that get assigned to people who are different, who are black, who are brown, who are poor. I think we have a criminal justice system that treats you better if you're rich and guilty than if you're poor and innocent. And those problems are a function, a consequence of our failure to address this history, to talk honestly. In South Africa, you can't spend time there without being confronted with the legacy of apartheid. Rwandans will make you listen to the story of the genocide. In Berlin, Germany, you see markers and monuments placed next to the homes of Jewish families abducted during the Holocaust. They want you to know that the Holocaust does not define them, that they're trying to confront it. But we haven't done a very good job of that in this country, and I think until we do, we're going to see racial conflict and tension and violence and distrust. And I'd like to get us to a different place. I'd like to actually find ways to have these conversations that are long overdue. And I think they do compromise our administration of criminal justice. Many of the clients that I represent are treated unfairly because of this legacy. And I want us to get to the point in this country where we can really be free, really experience one another, not through the lens of race and all these other constraints, but as human beings. But we can't do it without committing ourselves to a process of truth-telling about this history. And that's one of the reasons why we do the work we do.
The former senator from Alabama is now the head of the Justice Department in the federal government, Jeff Sessions. And as a result of that, yesterday there was a primary in Alabama to replace the seat he left. The Republican primary is going into a runoff between the senator who was appointed to fill his seat, Senator Luther Strange, and former Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore. Did you ever have to bring a case before Roy Moore when he was on the Alabama Supreme Court?
I have, yes. And in fact, I've had dealings with both of these folks. As you know, Roy Moore was removed from the Alabama Supreme Court several years ago because he insisted on bringing a granite monument to the Ten Commandments into the court. He did it without the consent of the other justices. It was deemed a violation of the separation of church and state. He was removed from the court. He then ran again and was reelected to the court and recently was removed a second time because he refused to implement the U.S. Supreme Court's decision, which authorized marriage equality. And he is now running for the Senate and is, you know, very popular because he won the primary in some circles and obviously very criticized in other circles. Luther Strange, who was appointed to take Jeff Sessions' seat, was also the attorney general here. I represented a man who spent 30 years on death row for a crime he didn't commit. And we tried for years to get Mr. Strange to just do a test on a gun that would have proved his innocence. He never did that, and Mr. Hinton had to spend an additional 16 years on death row. We finally got the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn that conviction. And I'm thrilled to report that Mr. Hinton is now free and his innocence was confirmed. But I've dealt with both of them, and I'll be honest that these choices sadden me, frankly, because I think we need leadership in this country that always submits to the rule of law, that's committed to protecting everyone. And I think there are a lot of questions that have to be answered when you look at some of these candidates.
We have to let you go now, but any final words for our listeners before we say goodbye?
Well, I'm just thrilled that there are people who are interested in talking about the kind of issues that we work on. There are people who are concerned about how we create better opportunity, better justice, better fairness for all of our citizens, and I appreciate your interest in talking with me, and I look forward to coming out to that region and having an opportunity to speak with people again. But thank you for your interest.
Thank you very much, Brian Stevenson. I look forward to meeting you next week here in Bozeman when you'll be giving the convocation address to the incoming freshmen at the Montana State University in Bozeman. Thank you so much for your work and for your time today.
You're very welcome.
We've been speaking with Brian Stevenson, founder and director of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama. If you haven't read his book, Just Mercy, A Story of Justice and Redemption, it's well worth your time to do it.